All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Wednesday, November 22nd. I'm the always truth-telling Doug Norrie, and that is
James Davis.
And we're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, dfsr.com for short. Go on over dfsr.com/NBA for a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. NBA covers NFL as well. We have NHL-based projections up there, so you're all set under one subscription. Everything you need to get yourself started for FanDuel and DraftKings, free for 3 days, and then just $34.95 a month after that, everything included in that subscription. All right, buddy, this is huge. This might be the biggest NBA day of the year. They essentially took yesterday off by throwing the two worst teams out there. They just said, let's get the Bulls and Suns out of the way on Tuesday. You guys can play by yourselves. And we'll see if anyone tunes in. Probably not. And then the real teams are all going to play on Wednesday. Every team that's playing today. I think the only two teams that are not playing, I don't think the Pacers are playing, and maybe not the Pistons. I think those are the only two teams that are not playing. Everyone else is playing because, again, they're taking off. They said, and also for Thursday, you can have Thursday football all to yourselves. So no games tomorrow. They're piling everything in. So a ton to talk about for NBA. Huge Wednesday slate. Let's get right into it. Washington goes in to play Charlotte. The Charlotte has gotten pretty much healthy now with Batum coming back, and they – it's really tough to trust a lot of their minutes beyond Kemba. Howard's coming off a big game. The overall total for this game kind of low. These are two teams. Yeah, on the one side, you have Washington, who plays pretty strict rotations with the five starters, although Markieff doesn't see as many minutes as the rest of the guys. And then you have a Hornets team that, like I said, outside of Kemba, doesn't seem too incentivized to play any of their guys' huge minutes. Any thoughts on this game?
Well, these are two teams, and I think we're seeing a trend that there are basically two kinds of teams in the NBA right now. The teams that kind of have wild opportunity that just kind of comes and goes and swings all over the place. And then there are teams with the steady opportunity, and both of these teams are the steady opportunity teams. And that can be good for cash game purposes, but really only when they're paired up in a really good matchup. And I don't think either of them really has that right now. So aside from, you know, the few potentially outlier guys that you mentioned already, I don't see any great way to scoop up tons of great points per dollar value. I mean, in terms of totals on this slate, the 210.5 total is one of the lower ones. And yeah, from there, I just don't know what you're getting away with by plugging these guys in. That being said, particularly some of these Washington guys, you know, if guys like, I don't know, John Wall or Brad Beal or, you know, guys with these relatively consistent opportunity, if they show up in your cash game lineups, I don't know if you need to X them out right away. Like in Beal, you're going to get 36 to 39 minutes a game and 20 plus real life points. And that's a pretty good floor. It's just that you're not really doing anything by going up against such a slow team in Charlotte.
Yeah, I agree. Beal has a pretty nice points per dollar just for his opportunity here, though. He will see a little bit more Batum, so it's not a fantastic matchup. Yeah, but I think I agree overall. This is not a game that I'm going to be heavily targeting. A game we might want to heavily target here is another 7 o'clock game. Brooklyn goes in to play Cleveland. Cleveland minus 11 favorites, one of the higher totals on the slate. They're coming. You know, Cleveland's big problem for most of this year up until the other day had been that they could put up points, but they really couldn't pull away from teams. And so LeBron was having to play tons of minutes because the second unit really just couldn't do anything in terms of just getting out, either maintaining a lead or expanding on a lead just because the second unit is complete garbage that we saw. That go the other way against the Pistons, where they just blew the doors off Detroit. The game was over by the fourth quarter, and LeBron really didn't need to play. Are you at all worried? I think LeBron is the clear play here. Brooklyn's bad, and you know you'd love to get high price guys in against teams like Brooklyn, just because that seems like just a slam spot in terms of just getting your points per dollar. Are you at all worried here about LeBron maybe getting buzzed off minutes because of the blowout again?
Yeah, I mean, we saw that happen in Detroit. Cleveland seems to be playing better recently. And when they're playing better, they're going to blow out teams like Brooklyn from time to time. And it's kind of interesting with LeBron, too, because on this price point at 12,000, he basically has, five or six good games on this price this season where you'd like be really happy for a cash game. And most of those happened in the first six games of the season. Since then, it's been a lot of mid 50s sort of performances. Obviously, the 38 point performance against Detroit, thanks to the blowout. So I don't think he's an auto play by any means at 12,000, just really in any matchup. And Brooklyn puts that to the test because it literally is the best possible matchup for a player of LeBron's caliber. I mean, Brooklyn playing the fastest pace this season with, bottom five defensive efficiency. So, yeah, from that perspective, it's a great spot. And I still don't know if you want to play LeBron for 12K really ever.
I think people are going to be looking at him and Giannis versus the Suns and kind of decide about which is the better matchup, which one you're going to possibly be able to avoid the blowout in. I probably would prefer Giannis.
That seems almost like an easy one to me. Like he just more consistently sustains this performance. He's sustained the performance at this price, and Phoenix is arguably just as good a matchup.
Right. So, and the rest of the Cavs, you know, I think you can, you know, we've seen Kevin Love go up. He had a huge game last game and still actually didn't need to play a ton of minutes. Love's the kind of guy where if he plays all of his minutes, that guy is paying these prices pretty easily and pretty consistently. Really, the question with him is just that times he just plays like 29 minutes, and it's not because of foul trouble. It's just because Ty Lue rotations that just kind of buzz him off, or they just I think at times they just don't want to play him a lot. I still think you can go back to his 8,000 ish price at least on DraftKings and say this is I'm in a pretty good spot with this because of the matchup, and I still would be worried. I still would be worried about the minutes on the other side of the ball. Trevor Booker is questionable. Isaiah Whitehead, doesn't really matter, is questionable. They are pretty short on guys right now. D'Angelo Russell has been hurt. Dinwiddie's had to play a lot. And like I said, if Booker were to sit, he played only a little bit last game and then had to come out. They're getting pretty thin. Do you think you'd be comfortable? This is a spot we don't usually like to go to, but would you be comfortable giving some of these Nets guys like Dinwiddie, Carroll, Ronnie Hollis-Jefferson, these guys more than 30 minutes and feel comfortable with that kind of projection?
I'll tell you what, I'm looking at Dinwiddie just because the last three games, you know, I was looking over his game script or game logs rather, and he's averaged paying this price pretty handily on the, you know, $7,600 price tag on FanDuel with 34, 49, and 39 fantasy points. And then I looked and it's a murderer's row of matchups. I mean, you have Boston, so both much better than them and super slow and great defense. Then you have Utah, better than them, slow, great defense. And then Golden State, so much better than them that the minutes are going to be a concern. And he's still been able to pay it. I think he's just such a ball hog for them right now in the best possible sense of the word, because he appears to be their best player right now. But scoring points, dishing assists, I think he's kind of doing it all right now. I still don't know if I would feel great playing it in cash games here, but the time you really want to play Dinwiddie is the next time the Nets don't play one of the worst possible matchups in the NBA for them. Like as soon as they just play like some kind of regular team like Atlanta or something, I think Dinwiddie will become a really like auto chalk cash game inclusion for our system. So right now though, it's going to be tough to want to roster any of these guys as minus 11 dogs.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, he's got a great matchup here. Like Cleveland can't defend the point
guard spot. That's true. They're quite poor at defending.
Yeah, they, you know, even when they had Rose, he can't defend. They threw Shumpert out to basically guard opposing point guards. He's hurt now, and now they're putting out Jose Calderon. Like they don't have anyone that can
Matador.
Right, exactly. So I think Dinwiddie, It's weird to pay $7,600 for a guy like Dinwiddie just because it's Spencer Dinwiddie. You're like, what am I doing here? There's just other guys in this price range like Kemba Walker.
It's like a 15 game slate. I think I can find something.
Right, exactly. Like, so I think that's the kind of the weird spot, but you definitely will get some separation on that play. And let's just keep an eye out for some of that injury news, because I think that some of their bigs minutes are going to open up if Booker sits. All right, let's keep rolling through these games. Another 7 o'clock game. Portland goes in to take Philly. No news and notes really from either side of the ball. I only say that because Embiid was questionable going into last game and he was fine and played. There's no news on that, on him at all, so I think that we can pretty safely count on him going out there for his full run of minutes. How are we feeling about Embiid now that the Sixers have basically taken off the training wheels in terms of his minutes? They've been happy to play him, you know, mid 30s, 34, 35 minutes, and he put up a 93 point fantasy game the other day. He's 10,000 now on FanDuel. Are you trusting that at you know, if you thought he was going to get 33 minutes, or you think he's just priced a little bit too high now?
Well, it's tricky on Embiid because he, like the Nets, is coming off a two-game really tough stretch where he destroyed the Lakers for all time. Basically, they got relegated after that game, is from what I was reading, and then went up against Golden State. It's a terrible matchup for a big of Embiid's profile, where a lot of the things he does really well kind of are rendered obsolete by Golden State's fast up and down plan. Then goes into Utah. You know, our game script leads him to playing only 26 minutes, still excellent on a points per dollar basis. I think you can absolutely consider him here. It's just, you got to consider that anytime you're playing a guy you're playing someone for 10,000. Like we saw this with Jokic when Jokic was kind of coming of age and really putting up huge fantasy totals too. When you're going to play someone at 10,000 who plays between 27 to 34 minutes, you're going to get huge volatility because 7 minutes, well, first of all, 7 minutes in a vacuum is just a ton. Like you don't see other $10,000+ players really fluctuate that much unless there's a really good specific reason, like a blowout. And normally the $10,000 players are the cause of the blowout. That cannot happen to bigs. You know, like Simmons can just take over. Embiid can, you know, not get a lot of rebounds one game or whatever. And, you know, there are just things that can happen to lead him to not paying a $10,000 price tag. That being said, though, Portland is quite a good matchup for his profile. I'm not sure. Like Nurkic has a reasonable reputation as a defender, but not for guys like Embiid. So I think it does represent a very good matchup here. And I think he's definitely worth considering, but far from a slam dunk at a 10-2 price tag.
And the other guy I would tend to on FanDuel is Simmons. And Simmons has been, he's been just as good, if not better, more consistent. He's paid 5X on this price, three of the last three games.
And I'd much rather play Simmons here for sure.
And then something like 7 of the last 10 games, he's paid 5X on this price. Our system is still, I feel like we've been a little bit low on Simmons all year this year. Like we still have his projection like underneath Porzingis for this and Griffin. It's something I'm going to investigate right now. I mean, do you think paying 10-2 for Simmons, now you're paying like sort of the same price as Anthony Davis. Like, do you think that's warranted for a guy like Simmons?
I do think it's warranted for Simmons again, because he has the ball in his hands. And I think simply having the ball in your hands, you know, we used to talk about this when it was more relevant back in the day between point guards and shooting guards, like on Draft Street, for instance, you could choose between the two of them. And frequently Sharks in cash games would just play more point guards because they just have the ball in their hands more. It's harder to have as low a floor when you're the person who bounces the ball up the court. You'll get incidental assists. You know, there's all sorts of different things that can go right for you. And then Simmons adds just this absurd rebounding profile, you know, being this mini LeBron Giannis hybrid. I said that you were comparing him one day. And if you can count on him for 9-ish rebounds per game, and you can count on him for just all that time of possession and having great finishers around him like Embiid, and to say nothing of the defensive stats. I mean, 5 steals against LA, 4 steals against Utah. He really contributes in every phase of the game. And so for that reason, if I had to choose, like I could only play one big money player for whatever reason, I think you'll be able to play more than one just because it's such a big slate and their value almost always creeps up in that case. But yeah, in that case, I would almost certainly just play Simmons.
There is no line in this game right now, and I'm not sure exactly why. It might be waiting on Damian Lillard news. Lillard was, I guess, questionable, but I can't really, other than that, figure out why there's no line on the game right now. So we'll just kind of move on. All right, hit us up with a sponsor, and then we'll move into the 7:30 games.
Yeah, let's talk about NoHalftime.com. So NoHalftime is a great place to go and play one-on-one daily fantasy challenges, particularly great on a slate like this. You think I'm a moron, you can go hunt around on NoHalftime and try to figure out if anyone's saying that Simmons is going to outscore Embiid tonight. You can cruise around, find other people's challenges that they've issued. You can issue challenges yourself. So you go in there, maybe you love Embiid tonight, you can issue him against all the other big money guys. If your challenges are accepted for any amount of money, then that it's game on. If not, you get your money back. So really great little app for little sweats without having to put too much time into constructing a whole salary cap game format lineup. So NoHalftime.com, download the app, use promo code DFSR. You get a 50% bonus up to $50 on your first deposit.
Clippers, 7:30 games. Clippers go in and face the Hawks. Clippers been struggling a little bit this season. They dealt with some injuries, obviously. Patrick Beverley has sat for a decent amount of time. Danilo Gallinari has been sitting for a while. These are the guys that they were kind of counting on to shore up some of the starting lineup concerns with the exit of Chris Paul, and they just haven't really had a ton of minutes with their starting lineup here. Blake's a guy too that he's kind of been a bit hit or miss, and that could be some of the turnover in the lineups just in general, maybe just playing without a true point guard. I mean, he was playing with one of the best point guards in basketball before, and that really hasn't been the case, but his performance over the short term has been like kind of nowhere near this $8,900 price. Do you like him at all against the Hawks? And then we can talk about some of the guys on the Atlanta side.
I think he's only okay. I think it's worthwhile to note, though, that the last two games, I don't think it's the Clippers' plan to play him only 34 minutes a game. I think the plan is more like 37 to 39 minutes per game. And that just really makes a difference. You know, an extra 4 minutes out of Blake on average is going to be something like 4 or 5 fantasy points or more. And I think if you can pencil him in for that increase, then the last couple of games don't look so bad. So I think it's, you know, wise to keep a steady hand with Blake here. The Hawks, a top 10 team in terms of pace this season, another bottom 5 team in terms of defensive efficiency. I do think it's a pretty good matchup for him, particularly because the Hawks, you know, now that Millsap and Horford are both gone, they really don't have a great defensive presence down low. I'm just looking at their big men here, and I don't know who's supposed to try to hang with Blake. I mean, certainly none of these guys can hang with him from an athleticism perspective. Babbitt's out, but he's a bad defender anyway. Ilyasova, terrible defender. Tyler Kavanaugh, I know that's not going to happen. So
I think it's going to be John Collins. I think Collins looks like he's going to start, but
up and down these guys, like, it doesn't really matter. I don't think any of them is going to be able to keep pace with Blake. So yeah, I do like Blake in this matchup, and I'm still not sure that it's where you want to land for your final cash game lineups, but if he's there, I think he's a fine inclusion.
On a points per dollar basis, we have him pretty damn high on FanDuel right now, mostly because, like you said, the price has been kept down because some of those minutes concerns in the short term just haven't totally been there. I have him at 38 minutes.
That's correct, though. I think in a normal game script, that's the Clippers' plan. I think they want him out there for 38 minutes. I mean, you've made the point in the past, and maybe it's appropriate here, that not much has to go wrong for you to not play the full 38 minutes, like, you know, weird rotations or, you know, the team doesn't call timeout when you think they are, and you just don't get your extra 2 minutes. So you're right in that sense that he probably won't average 38 minutes over the course of a season. But I think if you're trying to look at their plan for an individual game, I do think that's correct.
On the Atlanta side of the ball, like you said, Babbitt is going to be out here, and they are without Mike Muscala too. I really do think John Collins is going to come in and play something in the high 20s, low 30s minutes, just as a big. That doesn't seem like they've wanted to play Ilyasova even since he came back. He's been playing almost no minutes. He started at the beginning of the season, got injured, and was the old, now we have an excuse to not start you anymore, and that looks like to be the case. I can imagine a scenario where we get a lot of minutes out of Collins. He's coming at 5,200 on DraftKings. I'll say this, though, on FanDuel. The new value on FanDuel is not the 3,000 like we saw before when we played the Tyler Ulysses of the world at 3,000 for weeks, right? Like the new value is this 4,500 to $5,000 range usually, right? Like every once in a while, you'll get Omri Caspi starting for Durant and you can pretty safely go out and put out a $3,000 guy, things like that. You know, there was another example of someone like Greg Monroe at 3,000, guys like this that like are just going into a new situation. But for the most part, where we're finding value is this $4,500 to $5,500 range. Collins last game did play 36 minutes when Babbitt went out. I think 30 minutes seems pretty reasonable, and he strikes me as a pretty good cash game play. And I'm just not sure there's anything else on the Atlanta side of the ball unless you're seeing something I'm not.
No, I don't think I'm seeing anything that you're not there. Collins has been very effective on a points per dollar basis or just on a points per minute basis. And the rebounding's really been excellent. I mean, 8 and 7 rebounds in 22 and 24 minutes in slow matchups with Boston and Sacramento. I think this guy's the real deal on this price tag for sure.
And you sometimes every once in a while, 5,700, you will get big minutes games out of Taurean Prince. There are games where they leave him in for like, just a lot of stuff. Like he played 39 minutes against San Antonio the other day, and you will see at times 34 to 36. It just doesn't happen consistently enough. So Prince strikes me as a guy with like, you know, he's one of these rare mid 5,000s guys that had, at least on FanDuel, that has like 6X, 7X upside when the minutes are there. And so like, you have to kind of identify these guys sometimes. Like there are certain guys on teams that every once in a while they will just play like the whole game. It just doesn't happen enough. And Prince does strike me as kind of one of the that fits that profile. I should make a list of guys that I think fit that profile. These mid-tier guys that every once in a while will blow it out of the box in minutes. Maybe we can brainstorm a list later about that, because I think that actually would be pretty useful. All right, moving on. 7:30, Boston goes into Miami, which looks like to be the very slowest game of the night. A huge game, mostly because we have some time constraints here and because, I don't know, there's a million games, but in games like this, when you see a 197 over-under for a close game for a night that like nothing, almost everything else is over 210, is this kind of just register as a skip for you? I think the system's basically going to skip it. I don't know if you think there is value to be had on a game on a huge slate with just a game that's going to be played at just complete glacial pace.
There can be, but only when there's injury news. And since there isn't here, I don't think we can get any value. The only note I saw on this is Josh Richardson is questionable here. So if he were to sit, that would open up a significant number of minutes at the small forward position. But if there's nothing, you know, finite that comes around that, then I think, unfortunately, you know, the Boston situation is pretty well fleshed out at this point. Likewise with Miami. And that just means there's probably not a lot of value to be had when two of the slowest teams in the NBA that also play pretty good defense square off.
The final 7:30 game is Toronto at -4 favorites over the Knicks. Knicks playing at home or on the road against the Knicks. Toronto looks, Norman Powell is questionable. He's been a guy that we've been trying to figure out the minutes rotations when guys like he and Ibaka were not there. That seems like when we're getting the most value out of Toronto was when someone sits on their team. And after that, their rotation, I went back and just was auditing some of their minutes and their rotations. They're another one of these teams that after DeRozan and Lowry is very difficult to get a handle on. And so I think that can usually mean two things. That can be a bad team, like, I don't know, like the Suns. They're just like, that. Look, all our players are bad. So like, who cares who plays 25?
What do you want us to do?
What do you want us to do? These guys all stink. Like we can't justify playing 136 minutes. He's just as bad as the guy that's sitting right beside him on the bench. Or you get teams like Toronto that have like pretty smart coaches that are just playing matchup ball for a lot of the game. And that has its own set of risks because all of a sudden the coach isn't going to like let us know ahead of time that like he doesn't like one of these matchups. And now all of a sudden, you know, Anunoby is going to play 30 minutes and then the next game, both 24 and 21 still starting. And then Siakam's going to come in and play a lot of minutes. That's my general overall feeling about a team like the Raptors. Like, does that make sense when we're trying to project a team that just like, it's kind of just, I'm not calling like saying I can't like being an apologist, but it's very, very difficult to figure out the Raptors.
Well, I think it's worth keeping an eye on Siakam for big tournaments. He's just been straight up a better version of what Serge Ibaka does recently. Like, if Ibaka is just an occasional scorer who gets some rebounds and blocks to go with it, Siakam's been that, but better on a points per minute basis. So maybe that's worth keeping an eye on for big tournaments. Certainly, I mean, I don't think there's any word that Ibaka's going to sit, but I think he continues to be a good punt play if Ibaka were to sit. And then the other guy on this team, I mean, if you want to go in the slightly higher range, is DeMar DeRozan. The last four games, he's been better than 5x points per dollar on his FanDuel price in each of those games, in spite of not playing his full run of minutes. And so, you know, given that we have a reasonable recent proxy for this matchup, when they went up against the Knicks on the 17th and he scored 42 fantasy points, I do think you'll see some cash game ownership of him tonight.
Interesting. He's probably a little too expensive for me, at least on FanDuel. But the recent game log does, yeah, it does make you at least perk your ears up a little bit.
Well, it just depends. I mean, if you go on like strict year to dates, it's going to look expensive for sure. I think there were, you know, you don't want to go too deep on making excuses and so on, but there were a couple games where he played like 25, 26 minutes that do, I think, unfairly penalize his overall year-to-date averages. And I think if you try to, again, picture what a normal game looks like for DeRozan, 35 to 37 minutes on the court, then I think it's a very fair price in a matchup with a Knicks team that doesn't really have anyone that's a reasonable wing defender for my money. So, yeah, I think DeRozan's still definitely a worthwhile consideration.
On the Knicks side, we have Kristaps, and I just don't know what else. I mean, I guess Hardaway does play minutes at times. Kristaps, though, clear move this season to just get him to be the main usage guy. He was shooting. I mean, that's what happens when you jettison a guy like Melo from your team and then just don't have any other real guys who can. I mean, I guess Hardaway can score kind of. But besides that, they don't really have any scorers on their team. Last year, for 33 minutes, he was shooting 15 shots a game. In 33 minutes this year, he's shooting 21 shots a game. So has seen like what, like a 66% shot increase or something like that on his, or no, excuse me, 50% shot increase on his.
Yeah, he's third in the NBA in usage right now behind Harden and D'Angelo Russell, who's hurt. So that's pretty nuts for a guy that, you know, is still priced 33% lower than all those most expensive guys.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So if you, there's a group of power forwards, at least on FanDuel, that are in the 10,000 to 9,000 range, and that's Simmons, Porzingis, and Blake. Of that group, and Porzingis is right in the middle at 9,200. In terms of like trusting the guys at their price points, who stands out to you from that group? Because I think that's a group of guys that people are going to be trying to make a decision on tonight, at least over on FanDuel. And it's like, you can make cases for all three of them. We have them projected all kind of in the same range. Does one of those guys stand out to you among those three?
Sorry, Porzingis and who else?
Griffin, Porzingis, and Simmons.
I would say Simmons. I think Simmons will be the highest owned. I think he's probably got the highest floor, again, just because he has the ball in his hands so frequently. Porzingis has a couple different ways things can go wrong for him. He can totally go off, but he can run bad in terms of minutes. He's the rebounding is kind of up and down for him this year, and he doesn't really do a lot, whole lot else. So if that's not clicking, then we've seen the performance really take a dive. And when it is clicking, he can positively go off and run off multiple games where he's going to pay like 6x on this price. So I think there's tremendous upside with Porzingis. I think for cash game purposes, you have to be at least a little wary when you see 29 minutes against the Clippers or 26 minutes against the Kings. I think there's a lot to be concerned about with Porzingis just in terms of what the floor could look like.
For sure. All right, so let's move into the 8 o'clock games. Orlando goes in to play Minnesota. Minnesota, they have, when you look at coefficient of variation for guys, Minnesota starters are at least the Towns and Wiggins group are incredibly consistent, although their prices are kind of locked into that consistency. Like someone was complaining the other day about like, because we had Wiggins in one of our top lineups, and he put up a dud, so it happens. But they're saying like, yo, you can't play Wiggins in cash games. And I was like, Wiggins is kind of like just the guy you want to play in cash games. Like as long as the points per dollar is coming in a reasonable, like if he's coming in at a reasonable points per dollar rate to be ranking up near the top of lineups, he strikes me as just the kind of guy. But I feel like people have a feeling that Wiggins is incredibly up and down. Like, how do you reconcile this like idea that Wiggins is a volatile player when numbers say that he really isn't? He's really just actually a very, very consistent player at this price point.
Yeah, well, I think it's, we've talked about in the past that consistency doesn't necessarily mean someone's a good play. Like, for instance, and this isn't the case with Wiggins, but if he had averaged 20 fantasy points per game this season, but done that in every single game, you still wouldn't play him on 6,400 because the floor would be so outrageously low. So it's really a combination of value and consistency. And sometimes we're willing to take on very inconsistent players, like playing, for instance, like LeBron going into Brooklyn. LeBron in a vacuum is not an inconsistent player. That will wind up being a matchup with highly variable outcomes, right? There's going to be games against Brooklyn where he'll score 80 fantasy points when Brooklyn happens to hang, and games where he scores 38 because they blow them out and he doesn't play half the third quarter or any of the fourth. But the value is so high that you consider him anyway. Now, Wiggins comes in on the other side of the spectrum, which is to say the floor is very considerable. The upside is really nothing to write home about. And so you kind of know the baseline that you're getting, and then you're just processing the matchup at that point. And so for cash game purposes, I do think he's playable from that perspective, but I don't think he's like, I don't know. He's not like, when I picture my perfect cash game matchup, it doesn't include, you know, Wiggins even against like Brooklyn or something. Like, it's not necessarily that he's a tremendous play on $6,400, but he's more just like a guy that when he fills out your lineup, you're just okay with him. So
yeah, I agree.
I think Wiggins is fine. I mean, Orlando's a nice matchup. So this is a spot where you can play Wiggins if he shows up. And it's never going to be exciting, but always reasonable.
The rest of these guys, you know, Taj Gibson, we're still kind of buying lowish on. Not a great matchup here for Orlando. They're 7-point underdogs with a team that will just kind of have some inconsistency around their starters' minutes. Like, you want Aaron Gordon to be a 37 minute per game guy, and that just hasn't completely happened. And that's really just been kind of the case with all of their starters outside of Fournier, who they do. He's like the one guy that they seem at least incentivized to play a lot of minutes. Other 8 o'clock game, Dallas goes in to play Memphis. Mike Conley is still out. We saw finally a minutes uptick, even in the starter's position for Chalmers. Chalmers only 5,000 on DraftKings for a guy that is going to probably play a lot of minutes. How do you feel about the Chalmers? Chalmers is a cash game play here. Gasol with still no Conley. Tyreke Evans still gets a lot of minutes off the bench. What are your thoughts on the Memphis side?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, this is another game with 197 total, right? And so we have a full slate, and trying to find just tons of value in this game might wind up being difficult. Chalmers is interesting. He was, you know, obviously a nearly unanimous play on 3,900, I think rightfully so. I think there's a decent amount of volatility built into a $5,600 price tag for him. It hasn't looked that way the last two games, but you go back to that Indiana game, and I think if you look at that as a pretty reasonable floor. I mean, 8 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists doesn't sound like out of the ordinary for him. So I think he's playable, but definitely not. I wouldn't just like plug him in automatically in a game with a sub 200 total either. So Evans, I think you get a similar story, 7,500 for him in what amounts to his, but not the worst, but one of the slowest matchups. Once again, we've seen increased volatility for him on the minutes, terrible against Houston and bad on these prices against Portland too, in a game where other people on his team were actually good. So yeah, I don't think I want to play Evans either. Gasol kind of interesting though, 8,300, terrific matchup with Dallas's big men, been very, very consistent and even excellent on these prices at times. And it again looks like Memphis's plan in close games is just to play him every minute that they can without him dying. So if you can get him for 37 plus minutes in a game, he can be terrific on these prices.
Yep. I think Gasol, I mean, as of right now, he's in almost all of our cash games, at least on FanDuel. I'm not sure about DraftKings. Chalmers is, like I said, Chalmers is a guy. He's there on DraftKings as well. So I can see Gasol at these lower prices being a pretty high floor consistent play, even with the pace down matchup against Dallas. And Dallas, I don't think, I'm not really interested in anything on that side. Other 8 o'clock game, Denver goes into Houston. No line on this game right now. Not exactly sure what news they're waiting for here. I mean, the injury news obviously for Denver is that they lost Paul Millsap for a while. You know, he got the out indefinitely tag yesterday, which is a real shame. So he's not going to be there. Looks like Wilson Chandler will come back and play. He sat out last game. Will Barton was kind of a chalkier play, even on the news, even with the news kind of not out there yet about whether Chandler was going to play or not. What do you think? They started Fareed last time for Millsap, but he only ended up playing like 19 minutes. And again, Chandler wasn't there. Do you, if you had to make a guess sort of like what Denver's plan here is for like how they're going to attack a Houston team that, I mean, could really, really put it to him in this game. But in terms of just like, if you were to go high on minutes on somebody in this matchup, is there someone that you would feel confident here with Millsap out?
Well, if I had to make a guess and it was like my life depended on it, I'd probably just try to flee the country because Denver's always been just so insane. Like basically outside of Millsap, how many years has it been since they've really trusted a big man? Even when they had great ones like Nurkic and Jokic, like they just don't, that's just kind of not their thing for whatever reason to trust their bigs with any minutes. And so, yeah, for Fareed to get the start and play just 19 minutes, it's an absolute puzzle to me. I wouldn't be surprised at all if he went out there and played 33 minutes next game or 7 minutes. Trey Lyles, sort of the same way. He went out there for 18 minutes. I think, unfortunately, this feels like a situation where there really ought to be a lot of value. And maybe, frankly, Fareed is just a value on, even if he only plays 20 minutes. But if you're trying to say, like, who's going to play 30 minutes out of this crew, I don't know that you can honestly say that anyone will.
The part of me wants to go really high on Wilson Chandler's minutes because he can move up to the small ball four. Yeah, at
lower
times.
Back pain, though, that seems like that's a tricky one. But you're right. They've run him out there for 39, 40 plus minutes when they've gotten short in the past.
That's what I mean. And like in this matchup against Houston that just plays all these wing guys, Chandler just strikes me as the guy you would kind of want out there over some of the other aforementioned names. Right. So it wouldn't shock me if they did a starting lineup of like Murray, Harris, Barton, Chandler, Jokic, and just like tried to run and gum with Houston for the entire game. Like that might, and it could be the plan. And maybe we'll get some news on it ahead of time. I was wrong. There is a line on this game. It's Houston -9.5. Big total. I mean, Denver's creeping up toward 110 implied points, even as a pretty big underdog here. So this is going to be interesting. I think there will be some value. I still think there's some value on Jokic, even at his prices. His volatility has meant that his price has kind of stayed down. There are going to be the right kind of games where he completely crushes on these prices and just hasn't been as consistent, and that's why the price is still low. On the Houston side, I mean, we have Harden, obviously, in a game where they are projected for just about as many points as anybody on this slate. I think they actually might just have the highest overall total. Do you feel safe throwing Harden out here at his prices, knowing that it seems like you have a pretty high floor on him?
Yeah, I think the floor on Harden has rounded into a shape where we had hoped it would be early on in the season. Actually, ironically, it never really totally came together until November. Yeah, because I remember just like hating on him for quite some time. But yeah, recently, I mean, he's been locked in for 55 fantasy points a night, which on its face is already good value. And you know, you kind of ramp that up a little bit, go up against Denver in what still amounts to a plus matchup. Denver's been a little bit, you know, slower relative to the league, a little bit better defensively perhaps than in the past, but still, you know, in the bottom third of the league in both of those regards. So yeah, great matchup for Harden, really good big money payoff tonight. I think you'll see very high ownership on him. And you know, if you're it's not quite a good comparison because he's 1400 more, but if you're comparing him to a guy like Ben Simmons or that other group in terms of the big money category for spending up, I think I like Harden the best of them.
I think there's going to be some people that are going to want to try, and this might be correct, is to, if you can find any kind of value anywhere else, to play a combo deal of like Harden and Giannis in this tonight or something like that.
Yeah, that would be tricky, but possible on a slate where so many teams are playing.
Yeah, right now, if you look at our lineups right now, that Harden combination on FanDuel, it's going to be next to impossible on DraftKings, so forget that. And actually, Harden and Giannis are about the same price on DraftKings, and they at least qualify both at point guard, and then Giannis has a little bit more positional flexibility. Although I guess Harden qualifies as shooting guard too, but I think there people will make the choice. I probably still stick with Giannis, but if you look at our FanDuel lineups right now, the Harden Giannis combination is lineup 23. Now you get a real bum, and like you get like a loser who's like probably a minute too high, like in Kylo Quinn, so like that'll go away. But it speaks to that if anybody kind of shows up,
yeah, maybe you can jam Kenneth Fareed. You know, there's cheap guys that you can play if you really think that's the right way to go.
For sure. So I think that's going to be an interesting decision on Harden. And like I said, when you get Harden as one of the highest implied total guys, his team's the highest implied total on the night, that is a time when you really kind of want to target him. Other 8 o'clock game, and one that probably will be the most viewed of the night, Golden State goes into play OKC. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this still qualifies as a revenge game, because like we're a year away from Durant being gone, and like he was the one that left. So who's he really taking it revenge on? Like, so maybe it's the Thunder are a totally different team except for Westbrook, although he's really kind of just been the whole team since the beginning. Let's start with Golden State. Looks like Durant is going to be back. He did not play the other day and Caspi started. Then the coaching staff seemed to say he was going to play. And then he was like, we'll see. So like the news is a little bit kind of all over the place on whether or not he's definitely going to be back. I suspect, though, during the course of the day, no. Is this a game you want to target on the Golden State side? Do you think that, you know, we're always looking for games where Golden State's starters are going to be able to remain at their full minutes load, which is not always the case because of the blowout. Can you see yourself targeting some of these guys in this game, which is going to be a pretty high-profile matchup?
Well, certainly if Durant misses the game, I think I can absolutely see it. I think otherwise, though, it's a really tricky situation where you always want to find the games where Golden State's going to be playing in close games. But so often when they're going to be playing in closer games, it's because they're up against good defenses. And that's definitely the case here. OKC has been kind of wrestling with Boston for that number one defensive efficiency slot this season. They slipped down to third with Portland peeking their heads above, but just one of three teams with a defensive efficiency under 100 this year, which is really good. So it's not a great matchup from that perspective. Obviously, you know, guys like Westbrook, Paul George, like these guys, Roberson, Adams, you know, there's a number of plus defenders for their positions here on Oklahoma City. That being said, I think the additional minutes do give considerable upside. I mean, obviously, if Durant misses the game, then that just opens up the floodgates in terms of just overall matchup. But yeah, guys like Curry at 9,500, I mean, that's an okay price for him. We've certainly seen him go off on that price in the last two games. But just please realize that Oklahoma City, on a per minute basis, you're going to, on average, score much fewer fantasy points than you would against Philly and Brooklyn the way Curry did in those games. So yeah, there's it's all at once exciting because it could be close, and perhaps not that exciting just because OKC has been so tough on D this year.
Yeah, I think people have this idea that when they see Westbrook on the court, that they're like, oh, this is a run and gun team. And this is a team that like plays at a super fast pace. And they're just kind of like, Westbrook's going to drive the ball up and then they're going to be sprinting back in defense. That's not how OKC plays. Like, and now they have, I mean, they already had it. They already had two. Now they have three completely elite defenders in George, Roberson, and Adams. This team was built specifically to guard against Golden State, right? Like, I mean, they're specifically to guard against anybody, but the getting George in mind was like, this is a guy that we're going to be able to throw out and he can switch on anybody and specifically guard Durant, and then Adams and obviously Roberson. So you're not getting that run and gun style that I think people associate with Westbrook, because that's just like kind of not his game. Very interesting game though. OKC, I think you know, if the game stays close, these guys have huge upside. Westbrook has a huge upside at 10,000.
I really like Westbrook here, yeah.
Yeah, if he were to play 38, 39 minutes, he went completely off last game with the triple. He basically almost had a triple-double in the first half, ended up with 65 fantasy points, a 22, 16, and 12 line, overall against New Orleans. So Westbrook is interesting. I think Melo is very cheap on FanDuel, where you need to roster two power forwards, which is kind of consistently a problem. Melo at only 6,700. I think you can take a shot on him if he plays like 35 to 36 minutes. He's been pretty consistent at these prices overall. So I think you can.
Yeah, kind of medium, but yeah, they're reasonable.
Okay, let's move on. So, I have to say, for Wednesday night before Thanksgiving, that is the game that I'm looking forward to tuning into. Spurs and the Pelicans. Boogie got kicked out of the game last game with a flagrant 2 foul. You could kind of see it coming because he was getting his old Boogie frustrated. Like, you can sometimes see what's going to happen with Boogie before it happens. Yeah, like, you can see bad Boogie. We haven't had it in a while, which has been refreshing. He's been really damn good, and he's just been kind of happy. They're giving him shots, and he's just been a fantasy beast.
He's got another good player on his team for the first time in his career.
Right, exactly. So, and then all of a sudden, you can kind of see it creeping in, and then boom, flagrant 2 foul, and he's gone for the game, and Davis goes ham. Anything you want to target here on either side of the ball? Kind of a slower matchup, although, you know, around 104 implied points for each team. What are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, this is a tricky one for me. I think the Spurs, they're always in this kind of weird no man's land of, it doesn't seem like for teams as good, been as good as the Spurs have been from the time we've been doing this business, I feel like we've disproportionately not played them because they're just so willing. They just don't care about the conventional attitudes about like who's going to get the minutes and how many minutes each guy's going to get. And so while some guys have some minute security like Aldridge, then they just become appropriately priced. And then you're kind of doing this dance with everybody else. I'm curious to know what you think about Patty Mills though. I mean, he's been contributing across a bunch of different categories, but then goes out and has just two totally different performances with 16 fantasy points against OKC and 38 fantasy points against Atlanta. Is Mills a guy you can think about in what should be actually a pretty good matchup for opposing point guards?
Yeah, so they've done something interesting, the Spurs have, and they've essentially moved Kyle Anderson to point guard. Like, he's playing like this sort of a hybrid point guard role that they had not been employing before. Like, when Mills, and actually I think that really helps Mills, because what we've seen from Mills is he's contributed the most coming off the bench when he's been able to get shots up, but not necessarily as like a primary ball handler. He's essentially been a scorer. With the shift of, it's because they basically done that. It's not exactly totally clear what they've done. It seems to from watching, and then it's like Anderson's basically the point guard, Mills is the two, Green is the three, and then Gasol and Aldridge are like the four and five. I think that has actually helped Mills, and it's actually helped keep him on the court too, because I don't think they don't want him handling the ball with the team. They want him to be a spot up shooter, and they want him to be kind of just contributing in other ways with Anderson more as a distributor. From that point of view, like that sort of shift in terms of their lineup, I do like him more. I did not like him when he was just like the point guard. Does that make sense? Like, when he was just the point guard of the first unit, he just isn't. That's just kind of not a role for him. It's not a role for him. Like, especially if they're playing like dump the ball into, like, if he's going to be the guy getting the ball to Aldridge in the post, then he just kind of has lost his ability to do anything that he really does well. So anyway, long story short, the shift that they've had in their starting lineup, moving Anderson more to the point guard and moving him more to the two, at least that's what I see. Like, it's so weird with these hybrid positions now. And this is why it's so funny with like the way positions are labeled. It's just incorrect. And positions to me are more labeled about like who guards you more than like what you actually do outside. For some guys, they just clearly the guy that dribbles the ball up or whatever. After that, I think you should sometimes just get the position labeled of like whoever's guarding you on the court. Not exactly like what we're trying to figure out what you're doing on the court, if that makes sense. Anyway, long-winded filibuster answer to say, yes, I like Mills, and yes, I like Kyle Anderson too.
You like Anderson as well. Yeah, I mean, yeah. The fact that they're running the offense through Anderson, they've been really, really tremendous for his value. Like 6 and 10 assists in the last two games, you know, could potentially be kind of random. Because like if you look earlier in the season, he was getting 1 assist a game, 2 assists, maybe 3 assists in the games where he was playing similar minutes. But the Spurs have been known to mix things up. So yeah, I think there's definitely a little bit of value there.
Yeah, the assists are there to stay, I think, based on like what I'm viewing is what they're doing, right? I think that is that's the kind of the new plan, is to be running sort of a slightly different. Also, it'd be interesting to see what happens when Kawhi gets back. Spurs are the best, man. They just do such crazy cool stuff that they just would never see coming, and then are easily able to just switch it just when they get, you know, when a guy like Kawhi back. And then in New Orleans, a very, very tough matchup here against the Spurs. I just don't know if you're getting any value on any of these guys. I mean, Spurs.
Not on a 14 game slate.
Yeah, I don't think so. Right. But a game where you are going to get value is Milwaukee going into the Suns. Now, does this classify as a revenge game? First of all, revenge games are stupid, so I don't actually like put any stock into them. But I always try to figure out when other people like to think about revenge games and then what qualifies, because like, especially in this NBA where guys have just played for every team, like Bledsoe's played for like 4 teams now. So he's getting revenge against, I don't know, the other teams he played for, but
I think Bledsoe hates the Suns. I think this qualifies as a revenge game.
Well, sure. It helps. It helps also that the Suns suck. So you can just talk yourself into it. And like in terms of any narrative here, because even if Bledsoe had just been dropped in from outer space with these stats and was playing the Suns, then he would still be a play. Do you think he's going to be the chalk point guard on FanDuel? I mean, he's coming still pretty damn cheap on FanDuel. We're 6,400. We have him as by far the highest points per dollar play. And again, that doesn't have like the revenge multiplier tacked onto it. Do you think he'll be the chalk point guard, at least on FanDuel, where he's only 6,400?
I think he'll probably be the chalk play. It'd be pretty surprising for the Bucks not to like leave him out there if he's just going and playing at max energy, which, you know, one would assume that he will. I'm not totally sold on the minutes though. Like 35 was his highest so far minutes total against Washington. I'm not convinced that the plan isn't just to keep playing him 30 or 31 minutes. I think still think you can do it. I think if you just average up his points per minute in Milwaukee so far, like he's obviously still paying these prices, but just be a little careful. I think maybe going forward, maybe this is the game where you just happily play him. But if he like, say he only plays 32 minutes here, but completely goes off once again, and next game you have to play 7,000, just be a little cautious. I think people see Bledsoe, they see the Bucks, they see the other options at point guard and assume that he's going to be a mid-30s to high 30s guy eventually, but that's not guaranteed in my mind. But yeah, unfortunately, well, or fortunately, I guess, if we're going to play him, the matchup is just so excellent. Phoenix being the second fastest team in the league with one of the very worst defensive efficiencies, this is just a dream spot. So yeah, you're going to be able to run some Bucks out there for sure.
And just don't get caught too much in game log watching with Bledsoe's last game. He had something like 24 points on FanDuel just out of defensive stats. Like that's just not going to happen. 6 steals, 2 blocks. Like you're not going to get that on a consistent basis. So don't look at his game logs and be like, you know, oh, look, he's paying crazy points per dollar. Like you're just not going to get the way that FanDuel is scoring these defensive stats in a crazy way, which just, I think really sucks. Like it makes them way too overvalued for a thing that sometimes is just completely subjective about who even got the steal or the block. Like it's never subjective about whether the ball went in the basket or not, or like who the last guy to pass to somebody was in terms of rebounds or assists or who grabbed the ball at the basket. But the fact that the steals and blocks are worth so much, and at times can be like scrum kind of plays, or at times be like, you know, just got in a fingertip on the ball. And the fact that like the official scoring, sorry, I'm just going to go off on this for 1 second. The fact that the official scoring only ever changes about these two stats, right? Like you're never changing official scoring. Like the things that move your cash line at the end of the night that people are just get on complete tilt about. And I get it. I've been tilted out of like thousands of dollars on last second cash game moves or excuse me, last game stat corrections. Those are only ever moving off steals and blocks. So all of a sudden you've taken this thing that's completely subjective, kind of wonky anyway, and made it the most valuable thing. Makes no sense to me. Anyway,
it is crazy. I will say that there have been stat corrections on other stats in the past, but for whatever reason, this year, the steals and the blocks have really been kind of nuts.
Okay,
but we've definitely seen it on like assists, three-pointers, turn to two-pointers, like stuff like that definitely
happens. It's disproportionately on those two stats, let me say. Not to say it never happens on the other things. It's very rarely in question about who got a rebound. It's almost never in question about who scored the points. That's all I'm saying. It's like these two things, the disproportionate amount of stat corrections, and that just means that they're just the hardest things to kind of calculate, and now all of a sudden we've made them the most valuable thing on the most valuable kind of way to score points in fantasy on FanDuel, so it makes no sense. Giannis, I think, is going to be a very popular play here. I mean, Milwaukee's only -5.5 favorites here against Suns. That strikes me as pretty low, considering how bad the Suns are. Do you think it's more has to do with like the scrappiness of the Suns, the fact that maybe Milwaukee can't pull away in games? Like, we're not worried about it. According to Vegas here, we're not worried about the blowout at all for the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we look at this and, you know, we reflect that Vegas doesn't always have the same goals that we do. I think it's important to note, you know, that records this early in the season are probably not quite as good as point differential. So, like, take a team like the Bucks that are 500, and you take a team like OKC that's a game, or I guess two games below 500. But the Bucks have the, what is it? Yeah, -3 differential per game, where OKC has a +5 differential per game. If you're a betting man, bet the OKC to win more games over the course of the rest of the season than the Bucks do, because that's actually a pretty bad total. So, you know, if the Bucks have on average given up 3 points per game and the Suns have on average given up 8 points per game, that's really, I mean, those are two different teams, but it's nothing like with Golden State were playing the Suns, you know? So the Bucks are just kind of a bad team. So it's Phoenix. I don't know, two bad teams playing each other that typically doesn't end in a blowout.
Yeah, and it's a great spot because this is exactly the guys we want to target.
Let's play some basketball, baby. Let's watch some people run. No defense. I'm in. Let's do it.
Speaking of guys not running and playing a lot of defense, Chicago goes into Utah. I almost want to say skip here. I don't think you're not going to play anyone on the Chicago side. They did start Chris Dunn last game. Didn't play him a ton of minutes. So whatever. You're not doing anything on the Chicago side.
This is a hideous game.
Okay, so 10, we're just going to hit skip on that one. 10:30, Lakers go and play the Kings. Kings, I mean, this is kind of interesting in the sense that they sat Buddy Hield last game. Ooh, I actually started some Kings in cash games, Buddy. Last game, I went against what was going to be my mantra. I started Darren Fox in cash games. I wasn't too displeased with how it turned out. Although with Hield coming back, Fox has been starting. It's hard to trust that. It's really just hard to trust overall with the Kings, what they're going to do. Though they have played Hill and Fox together and seem to like that combination. Anything you like from this game?
Oh, yeah, I guess Fox is a consideration. I mean, if he's going to play 32 minutes a game, he's probably slightly underpriced for the current paradigm. The Lakers, well, going up against the Kings is weird. The Kings have the very worst defensive efficiency this season, so you like that. But then they play the second slowest pace in the league, so it kind of offsets a lot of what you get from there. It kind of turns them, in my mind anyway, into a league average matchup. Now, the Lakers from game to game definitely do present interesting opportunity situations because their guys can kind of shift an opportunity pretty dramatically and wind up with mid-30s to higher minutes. That being said, right now I think they're relatively stable in terms of their minutes, and I think the slow pace of this game probably precludes us from playing them.
Yep, Vegas sees that too, with the total being just on the lower side, even for a team that don't really
play. How about KCP though? Your boy KCP, 40 plus fantasy points in each of the last two games, averaging paying 6x plus on this point in this price. Is this finally the KCP we've been waiting for, Doug, from Detroit, where was a routine Dante Cunningham all-star to even doing that earlier this season? Can we trust him for this kind of, you know, kind of handy 30 plus fantasy point per game performance?
The rebounds are encouraging for sure. I mean, that was not something that was a big part of his profile.
Chipping
in the past.
In some assists, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if he's just like kind of a different sort of fantasy player, I don't know. He still strikes me as a guy that like needs to just be on the court a ton to pay these prices, but he's been playing a lot. And I also just get at times worried about how much the Lakers are actually going to play their starters. Although I got to say, his minutes have been trending to the mid-30s, even higher. So it might be a little bit low on KCP. Yeah, he kind of talked me into it a little bit. I don't love, don't love. He's a decent points per dollar play in our system, something like the 7th overall guy. And I probably like him more than, like, I'd probably choose him if I wasn't sure about what, like, the starting lineup was. I'd probably play him over, like, Will Barton, let's say. Right. But it would still be close. All right, we're going to get out of here. DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com/NBA. Free for 3 days, $34.95. After that, and you just g-chatted me a picture of somebody, so I'm just gonna look at that in a second. So it's distracting me during as we end the podcast. dfsr.com/nba, free for the 34.95 a month. After that, we'll be back on Friday discussing a full NBA slate. Everyone, enjoy your Thanksgiving with football. We'll see, talk to you again on Friday when we talk some more basketball. For DFSR, I'm screwing this up because you screwed me up by saying
you're welcome, right, buddy. That was the plan all along.
Take it easy.